It's Sam Cedar. Introducing whiny-ass, teeny-baby conservatives to the truth. Wow, wow, conservatives. That's you crying. The left just got a little bit louder on The Majority Report.
So violent, that rhetoric. Whiny-ass TD babies. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Tuesday, January 11th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live from the, or in the, literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Alex Perrine of Salon.com. And I'm steaming over the reaction by the mainstream media to this horrible tragedy over the weekend. Look, at this point, I think it's quite clear that the person or the alleged accused shooter in this instance is crazy. And I'm not using that obviously in a technical term, but and I am in no position to diagnose whether or not he's crazy. But two things. One is, just because a person is crazy does not mean that they are not influenced by what is going on in society at large. It's insane to think that they're not. They are, in fact. And I saw someone, I can't remember who it was. Was it The Fix? Was it some mainstream reporter saying, well, he was a registered independent, which makes it impossible that he was acting upon any political messages. And I had a conversation on Dylan Radigan's program yesterday. And there is some expectation that... Excuse me, let's take care of that in post.
Isn't it?
Thank you. There is some expectation that somehow Barack Obama is going to bring the country together and that this type of political rhetoric... Not political rhetoric. Let's call it what it is. Violent eliminationist rhetoric can somehow be controlled or diminished by something that Barack Obama says. Look, you cannot get to a place where this tragedy, where there's anything that positive that comes out of this tragedy, if you are not willing to recognize the reality of what has been going on. Now, I don't know that anything positive can come out of this. Frankly, I tend to doubt it. But to whitewash the reality of what's been going on, and I'm talking specifically the eliminationist, the violent, gun-oriented rhetoric that comes from the right. And look, you know, it's really not a question of necessarily what some Tea Partier wears on his shirt. I mean, really, at the end of the day, it is that the standard, the bar, has been so dramatically lowered by elected officials on the right, by political leaders on the right. And when Matt Bai writes a piece saying, well, you know, on one hand we have Sarah Palin, the former VP of the Republican Party, and on the other hand, we have a diarist from Daily Kos who suggested that Giffords was dead to him because she voted in a way that he didn't like. Like in the way that my grandmother would say, oh, Marjorie's dead to me because she wouldn't, because of the way she plays bridge. I mean, honestly, are you really Are you really saying both of those examples? A diarist on the Daily Kos saying that person's dead to me. The functional equivalent of from your mouth to God's ears. And the actions of the former vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party. And, of course, it doesn't just stop with her. I mean, it's quite easy. It's quite easy to have a list of other examples of this type of behavior from elected Republican officials, from nominated candidates. We played that audio yesterday of a right-wing talker who said basically bullets, not ballots, and then was subsequently hired as the chief of staff of an incoming Republican freshman, fired only after there was a huge outcry. And, you know, to his credit, at least he fired him. That type of action is somewhat responsible, though, of course, he must have known what she said when he hired her. On October 9th, 2009, House candidate Robert Lowry of Florida held an event at Broward County Gun Range during which he fired a series of symbolic political targets, including a silhouette with his opponent, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz's initials on it. On January 10th, 2010, Nevada Senate candidate Sharon Angle spoke of the need for a Second Amendment remedies to congressional policies. What in the world could she be talking about? On May 10th, 2010, House candidate Brad Goering from California's 11th District wrote on his Facebook page, if I could issue hunting permits, I would officially declare today opening day for liberals. The season would extend through November 2nd and have no limits on how many taken, as we desperately need to thin the herd. On June 12, 2010, Representative Gifford's very own Republican opponent, Jesse Kelly, held an event advertised locally as, quote, get on target for victory in November. Help remove Gabriel Giffords from office. Shoot a fully automatic M16 with Jesse Kelly, end quote. On October 21, 2010, Dallas pastor and House candidate Stephen Brodin said the violent overthrow of the U.S. government in 2010 should not be, quote, the first option. Oh, good for him. But citizens ought to use any means necessary, and that violence should remain an option on the table. I mean, it's not hard to find more lists. It's just not hard. And, you know, on Radigan yesterday, people were, Dylan Radigan was like, you know, can we get rid of this? Or the Republican I was on was saying, like, you know, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan would drink beers after fighting with each other. Look, I think it's perfectly fine to have serious, serious arguments in politics. I think it's perfectly fine to hate your political opponent. I mean, this happens all the time. My 5-year-old daughter comes home from school. You know, blankety blank said, I hate you. You're mean. Somebody said, you're not going to have snack today. I'm going to keep you from having juice. Don't tell the teacher or I'm going to hate you. I'm going to sit there and say to my daughter, look, we shouldn't hate each other. No, the bottom line is, yeah, there are people who are mean. There are people who are going to hate you. But your response is what is relevant there. You simply say, I don't need to talk to you, and walk away. You don't say, I'm going to hit you. And it would be far worse, in my estimation, in the context of that 5-year of that kindergarten, if a 5-year-old says, I hate you and you're not going to get snack today, then if a teacher condone that language and actually use that language herself. Now, I'm not suggesting that politicians relative to their constituents are teachers and their constituents are five-year-olds. Although there's probably an argument for some on the right. What I am suggesting is, if there are any people who should be held up to the highest standard in terms of their rhetoric, if there are any people who have a responsibility to tell their constituents, do not use this rhetoric, it has no place in the democratic, in the political sphere, it would be elected officials. It would be party nominees. It would be pundits. And to pretend that there is some type of equivalency here between what has gone on the right and the left, if you pretend that, as a media figure, you are just as culpable, in my estimation, if not more. Because you are the last backstop. You are the only person who can disincentivize this behavior at the end of the day. And you'll never do that. You'll never do that. I mean, how far did Ann Coulter have to go before she wasn't on every mainstream outlet? And that was really just because people got bored with her. It really had nothing to do with what she had said. You know, how Sarah Palin should be completely shunned. Not that I particularly want that from a political standpoint. Gosh, I hope she wins. I hope she's the Republican nominee. There's no one happier. You understand, there is no one happier than the Republican leadership that she's caught up in this. No one. No one. You will not find no one. No one. They are so happy. They are so praying that this will finally take her off of the... And they may very well, you know, throw her overboard because of this. But, you know, as John Bonair said the other day on that clip we played, I'm not responsible for what people believe. You don't think there's a connection between birtherism and this type of eliminationist rhetoric? If you believe and you are and your belief is condoned, tacitly, implicitly approved by your political leadership, that Barack Obama is not born in the citizen was not a citizen of the United States, is not born in America. If you allow that rhetoric to continue, follow it down its natural progression. There's been a coup. And if there's been a coup and some of your other politicians are saying time for a Second Amendment remedy for things like health care reform, it is absurd to assume that there is no connection between what is going on in general in our society and how it would impact someone who was clinically mentally ill. When we come back, Alex Perrine of Salon.com and his piece, Watering the Tree of Liberty. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone, Alex Perrine of Salon.com. Welcome to the program, Alex.
Hi, thank you.
So, Alex, I should also tell you right up front that Dorsey, who works in the office here, this is probably probably his most exciting day in working here in months, because he's a huge fan of yours.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you.
There you go, Dorsey.
You're welcome.
Maybe we can arrange to have like some type of autograph picture forwarded. But let's not spend time. All right. Well, that said, I'm also a fan as well. I read you quite often at Salon.com. And I wanted to talk to you about something you posted, I guess it was yesterday or the other day, Watering the Tree of Liberty. And you suggest that, well, you don't suggest, you argue, I guess, in some respects. It's sort of irrelevant what his specific political orientation is, and it's sort of irrelevant to what extent he is mentally ill. You argue there's a reason why his paranoia was directed at an elected official, and that this is the inevitable conclusion of 2 years of hysterical revolutionary language suffusing every single domestic political debate. Explain that to us.
Well, I mean, my basic point was I read something that James Fallows wrote about how when Kennedy was shot, even though the person who shot him was, you know, a Marxist and a crazy person, it felt like in Dallas it had become so heated and so insane and so anti-Kennedy that it similarly just seemed like this was sort of, after the fact, it seemed like that was just sort of the end result. Like the entire atmosphere and the entire culture had just become so crazy that it almost was irrelevant who had pulled the trigger, because it just felt like, you know, sort of everyone was in a way to blame. And basically the idea is that for years now, since Obama took office, like the rhetoric and the politicking has been like not just like violent and over the top, but also hammering home the very specific point that, you know, the current administration and the current federal government is completely illegitimate, is illegally, exercising power over citizens, is violating, you know, the Constitution, and like there's all these sort of extremely formerly out there wing nutty ideas about individual sovereignty and the illegitimacy of basically the entire federal government suddenly became much more mainstreamed. And basically a lot of this was just done cynically, like to get people, you know, worked up so that they vote Republican or whatever. But even when you're cynically, you know, just playing along that the entire government is illegitimate, you're going to have people who then believe it. You know, there are going to be people who are like, well, if the entire government's illegitimate, then shouldn't we do something about that?
To that end, let's play a clip of Michelle Bachmann, which you cite on your post. You may not be able to hear it, but it's 39 seconds long, and you know it. But let's play that right now.
Now, because of this underlying bill, the federal government will virtually have control over every aspect of lives for the American people. It is time to stand up and say, we get to choose. We choose liberty or we choose tyranny. It's one of the two. The underlying bill represents the tyranny and the intervention of the federal government. Mr. Forbes' amendment represents liberty for the American people. It's our choice. What will we choose today? Will we choose liberty or will we choose tyranny? I choose Mr. Forbes' amendment. I
yield back.
Gentlemen,
time has expired.
So she's sitting there talking about, we didn't actually say it, but one would think that she's sitting there talking about the idea that we're rounding up people and putting them in concentration camps. But in fact, what she's talking about is the climate change bill. And she's saying we have to choose between liberty and tyranny. And that's
right.
A pretty stark choice, isn't it?
Yes, for a bill to tax carbon emissions, or not even to tax them, but yeah, and then she's using the language of Thomas Jefferson literally calling for a violent, like an armed violent insurrection against an oppressor. I mean, that's the language she's using, like, you know, for what is a basically pretty bog standard bit of liberal domestic policy.
And you know, the interesting thing is that I felt that the Bush administration was illegitimately chosen to be as president. I mean, frankly, I mean, look, we can debate as to whether or not. I mean, I think you and I would agree on this on this perspective. But the point is that I don't think I ever heard anybody who agreed with that assessment that the Supreme Court was inappropriate in stopping the count in Florida, who started referring this to as tyranny and liberty, and we must revert to talking about Jefferson and the blood of patriots must run. I mean, I heard none of that type of rhetoric.
No, I mean, and you'll get conservatives every now and then who try to say, you know, the left is just as bad. And their examples are always like answer socialist protesters that they saw one time at a rally, you know? It's not like it's, you know, prominent elected officials. It's not a member of Congress. Like, the worst that the liberal rhetoric ever got was just on a very limited, like, extreme. And it just was nowhere near as pervasive. And that was in response to an administration that many liberals did think, for good reason, was illegitimately picked.
Absolutely. And I've never even heard any, Democratic elected officials ever in any way condone that type of talk.
Never. I mean, they never would come close to condoning it.
John Bonaire, just the other day, said it was not his responsibility to tell birthers in his own caucus in the House that what they think is wrong. I mean, it's rather astonishing.
That is.
Now, with that said, okay, well, we agree with that. But tell us the story of I had not seen this quote, or maybe I had, but not so specifically. You have a great quote in your piece from Eric Erickson, who is a commentator, a paid commentator on CNN. Retell that story for us.
Oh, yeah, Eric Erickson, he's a red state blogger, and red state's one of the most, like, biggest of the Republican blogs, very mainstream Republican, and obviously he's also now a paid political analyst for CNN. And he just got very upset a couple years ago to learn that in Washington state they were going to ban dish detergent with phosphates because it was polluting water. And so people had to switch to a different brand of dish detergent. And
I got to tell it is upsetting. Sometimes it leaves a little bit of a film. Sometimes you have to almost wash your dishes twice.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, you do have to. You might have to rinse them off after you wash them. It can be annoying.
It can definitely be annoying. So his response to this was?
His response was he went on his blog, and he never took this post down. This post is still live on Red State. And he literally said, at what point do people do they get off the couch, march down to their state legislator's house, pull him outside, and beat him to a bloody pulp for being an idiot? That's a quote, the entire beating him to a bloody pulp thing. And it was not necessarily a call for people to do that. He was just wondering when it's going to happen. He feels it's inevitable that people will become so upset they will begin beating their state legislators to a bloody pulp. And a couple paragraphs later, he says, "Were I in Washington State, I'd be cleaning my gun about now." And this, once again, in response to a ban on dish detergent.
And so, I mean, it's funny, except, of course, we have seen the end product of, I mean, I don't know if you can draw a direct line here, but like you say, this stuff is in the ether. They are promoting this to people who are certainly riled up and have been told essentially by their elected leaders that this type of rhetoric is perfectly appropriate. Not only do you not pay a price for this, and let me ask you this. To what extent, I don't know if you read the Matt Bai piece in the New York Times the other day, in response to this, creating an equivalency between a diarist on the Daily Kos who said that Giffords is dead to me because she took a vote I don't like, and the rhetoric coming from people like Sarah Palin. Give me your sense of what the implications are of the mainstream media creating this equivalency.
Well, they sort of need it. I mean, they really, the sort of supposedly objective media really, like, sort of desperately needs for their own sense of self-worth to preserve the idea that there are two extremes that they are straddling right the middle of. So I can understand why he would do that, but it's like classic, like, nut-picking. It really is just, like, almost like you can feel like a desperate search went out to find some liberal who said something that could be construed as sounding violent about this, you know, because... that's not even a statement of violence, really. She's dead to me is a fairly common expression that does not, but whatever. It's, they, so And I'm not necessarily against heated rhetoric. I engage in name calling and hyperbole and exaggeration. And but it's really like there's not a explicit campaign on the left to delegitimize the entire idea of federal governance. And, you know, there's just not, and there never has been. And you can go around looking for isolated pieces of over-the-top rhetoric, but that does not, like, those isolated bits do not make up this entire years-long campaign on the right, which has been, you know, organized and coming from all levels, from the top to the bottom.
But let me ask you this. Now, what are the implications? I mean, you know, there's a lot of calls now for civility and for these establishment media voices looking for unity. But, I mean, to what extent does the fact that Matt Bai writes this piece, now, of course, he has his agenda, which is to become, you know, the next David Broder or something and seem somehow above the fray in some way. But to what extent are responses like that from the mainstream media actually in some way giving tacit approval or, at the very least, not providing the proper disincentive for this type of language, if they are willing to create this false equivalency and not really call out the culprits here?
Well, it totally does. I mean, while they spend a lot of time touting and saying, oh, if only we could all be more civil and polite, like, what it actually does in effect is say, like, no matter how extreme you get, like, no matter how extreme and how over the top and how insane you get, we will never find it more insane and over the top than the other side. So there's no disincentive whatsoever for making your rhetoric as over the top as possible, because the supposed watchdogs, the supposed, you know, grown-ups in charge are just going to say, you know, they're going to be like, oh, those kids are at it again. But they're not ever going to say, like, wow, that side is just taking it to a huge extreme that the supposed other side doesn't. Because the mainstream media, as I said, they are, no matter how over the top the other side gets, they're just going to say, well, both sides do it. What can you do?
Exactly. All right. Well, Alex Perrine, thank you very much for your time. We're going to take a break. And folks, check out Alex Perrine over at Salon.com. The War Room, how appropriate.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, we'll talk to you
later. Right,
thanks for joining us, Alex.
Thanks a lot.
All right, folks, we got to take a break. We will be back in just a minute. We are back. One interesting fallout, I guess, from, and perhaps positive fallout from this this attempt at assassination. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what else, how else you could refer to it. I think Ari Rabenhof, I'm not sure where exactly he posted this. Had a piece entitled Nine Bullets. And Dorsey, you gotta watch out for your mic there. Is it not him?
No, it's this cable.
Okay. Well, we gotta get a new cable.
Yeah.
Make a list for that. Right. Thank you. Nine Bullets. Is there anything we could have done to reverse even a small part of Saturday's tragic shooting in Tucson? The answer is sadly yes. Had the Clinton-era assault weapon ban never expired, it's likely that nine of the bullets that struck victims would have never been fired. As Salon reports, Jared Lee Loeffner legally purchased a semi-automatic Glock 19 with a high-capacity magazine in November at a gun store in Tucson. Under the assault weapons ban, it was illegal to manufacture or sell new high-capacity magazines, defined as those that hold more than 10 rounds. The magazines used by Loeffner had 31 rounds each, according to police. Now, understand, he shot 19 people. Then was attempting to reload and was jumped by a 61-year-old woman. I think at that point he tried to reload again and something was jammed.
Yeah, the spring in the magazine failed.
So if Loeffner had been using a traditional magazine, quote, it would have drastically reduced the number of shots he got off before he had to pause, unload, and reload, and he could have been stopped, said Daniel Weiss, senior attorney at the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. Now, the NRA really was responsible for making sure the assault weapons ban expired, even though its renewal was supported by President Bush, but the NRA basically, you know, a Republican president melts in front of an NRA, and frankly, it seems like any president does at this point. The NRA claimed the magazine limit isn't a factor in multiple victim or multiple wound crimes. Whoops. Loeffner was able to fire 31 rounds from his Glock 19, killing 6 people and injuring 13 others. And Peter King, leading Republican, came out and has introduced legislation, or will introduce legislation, making it illegal to bring a gun within 1,000 feet of a government official. Bloomberg, who is one of the country's greatest outspoken advocates of gun control, is backing King's measure and will put the weight of his pro-gun control organization behind it. In other words, now, I have another idea. How about you make it illegal to bring a gun within 1,000 feet of me, too? And of my child and my wife. That would be a good idea. How about you make it illegal to bring a gun within 1,000 feet of any people? Unless you're in the woods hunting deer or squirrels. I have no problem with hunting. I mean, I don't know if I could do it. Although, I suppose in certain circumstances, maybe. You know, there are certain areas where hunting is perfectly legitimate. And I have neighbors who, from the months of essentially December till the following summer, maybe all year round, they will eat only one type of meat, and that will be venison. And on occasion, squirrel. That's how they do it. They go out, they kill their one deer, they get it cleaned, and they store it in a freezer, and that's how they eat meat. But maybe reinstating the assault weapon ban would also be a good idea. Because guess what? If you need a semi-automatic weapon to hunt, you shouldn't be hunting. It's not safe. It's not safe for you or the people who go out with you.
Well, the assault weapons ban, as I understand it, doesn't even restrict semi-automatic weapons.
No, it would. It restricts high-capacity magazines.
Yeah.
So there's many different options in which you could use to actually prevent the access to a gun like this. But it's not guns that kill people. And it's not the access that someone who may be mentally ill might have to guns. I mean, is there even a background check for something like that? Do you just go in and buy that gun?
State by state.
In Arizona, it appears that you don't need a permit, so I don't understand how that, you know, what would they issue?
If you don't need a permit, as I understand it, at least you there's no check.
You got a credit card? Fair enough.
When I was there,
you know,
I can't even. When I was there, I went to a Walmart type place, and they had a big sign that said you had to check your guns in before you went in, because people just, you know, they carry them on their side like it's, you know, Wild West.
Well, that was helpful, wasn't it? That really helped. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how the right reacts to this Peter King thing. Just an update, because someone on the IM had asked me about it. Don Siegelman, and I don't know if he is out on bond at the moment, but he is going to go back to federal appeals court
He and HealthSouth CEO Richard Scrushy. Scrushy, you remember, was the one who was supposedly bribing him for access to sit on a board that he sat on and was appointed to by the Republican governor before Don Siegelman. And Scrushy's payoff to Don Siegelman, supposed payoff, was Scrushy contributing to a literacy campaign that the state was advocating. I mean, just absurd. Attorneys for the two will make their arguments to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in 2 weeks in Jacksonville, Florida. Siegelman and Scrushy claim their 2006 convictions should be overturned because of recent U.S. Supreme Court rulings dealing with federal corruption cases. The appeals court ruled against the two men earlier. The hearing is set for January 19th. I will check on that as it develops. And here's some pretty good news. There's something like even a little happier, I think. Like, what do we got? Like,
I on a hill was a lonely goat.
That, because this is actually pretty happy in and of itself.
Come with me.
No. Let's see. How about this? A judge yesterday ordered Tom DeLay, former U.S. House Majority Leader, to serve 3 years in prison for his role in a scheme to illegally funnel corporate money to Texas candidates in 2002. I hope this isn't too heated of rhetoric, but let me just say, of course, we'll do it. Oh. The sentence comes after a jury. Oh, please, people, sit down. Sit down. The sentence comes after a jury in November convicted DeLay on charges of money laundering and conspiracy to commit money laundering. This is my favorite quote of his. I can't be remorseful. Are you ready for this hard-hitting denial of DeLay's? Incidentally, he also accepted the 10 years of probation instead of more prison time. So this is his hard-hitting denial. I can't be remorseful for something I don't think I did. How's that? I don't think I did it. Senior Judge Pat Priest sentenced him to a three-year term on conspiracy charge. He also sentenced him 5 years in prison on money laundering charge, but allowed DeLay to accept 10 years of probation instead of more prison time. He was immediately taken into custody, but Priest granted a request from his attorneys to be freed on $10,000 pending appeal. Prosecutor said it could mean DeLay will be free for months or even years as his appeal makes it through the Texas court system. Well, that's a shame. The former representative had faced up to a life in prison. He should have gotten it. That's just what you would get if you were doing this for drug money. He did it for political money, which ended up, understand how his scheme went here. He used corporate money to influence statewide races, which is about the only campaign law that Texas has. Just about anything else is legal. And he funneled the money from corporations in or outside of Texas into a federal PAC, which then gave the money to a state PAC, et cetera, et cetera. Then he did this very consciously because he knew what he was doing was against the law. He then, in 2002... managed to get a balance of Republicans elected to the Texas state legislature, wherein it threw control to Republicans in the Texas State House, allowed them to redistrict the congressional districts in the state of Texas, thereby causing a handful of Democrats to lose who had otherwise won, even in the tide of Republicans in 2002, and thereby solidifying his own power in the House in Washington. So this guy had a very complicated scheme to affect federal legislation, state legislation, all by money laundering. The man was horribly corrupt. He used his power and enhanced his power through a tremendous amount of corruption. And then went on to do things like, you know, protect slave labor in Saipan and do a lot of golfing with corporate buddies. So, Tom DeLay, I know you'll be out of prison while your appeal continues on, but let me just say, cannot wait for that day to hear the bars shut and you... You go on having to try and, I don't know, trade a pack of cigarettes for not getting beat up. This is actually an interesting story, and it gets a little bit weedy, but I'm going to go ahead with it anyways because, this is actually a fun one. I got two stories, actually, that I'll read first. One is, you know how John Bonaire has spent the better part of 2010 saying, we need to cut spending. That's what American people want. The economy needs, he said in December of 2010. He said we need to cut spending significantly in December 2010. In November of 2010, it starts with cutting spending instead of increasing it. In August of 2010, we will not solve our fiscal challenges until we cut spending. In August, again, we have to get our arms around the runaway spending. In October of 2010, if we're elected to the majority, you're going to see us cut spending. In December, again, of 2010, if the lame duck Congress is unwilling to cut spending, the new House majority will act in January. Republicans have been consistent focused on offering better solutions to cut spending now, he said in June of 2010. We will never get an economy out of the ditch unless we cut spending, he said in August 30th. So, just the other day, he's on an interview with Brian Williams. Brian Williams asks him this, and what does Bonaire say?
Do you consider the defense budget sacred? Do you consider
absolutely
the department?
Absolutely not.
Do you consider the Homeland Security budget
no
sacred?
No!
What
I,
goes?
Listen.
Name a program right now that we could do without.
I don't think I have one off the top of my head.
Hey, what happened?
You spent all that time saying we needed to cut spending. You couldn't come up with one thing to cut? Should have given me that question written beforehand so I could... Why don't you just tell him what you really think, Bonaire? Why don't you just say, Brian, I'm 7 martinis. I can't even. I'm just sitting here just violently trying not to urinate in my pants. I'm trying so desperately not to soil my pants right now. I can't possibly think of something to cut. No, nothing. What is it? What does he say? What is it? Play that again. He's like, no. Play that again with him.
Do you consider the defense budget sacred? Do you consider
absolutely
the department?
Absolutely not.
Do you consider the Homeland Security budget
no
sacred?
No.
Listen.
Name a program right now that we could do without.
I don't think I have one off the top of my head.
I don't think I have one up on my head. What is that on your chest? What do you got over there? What is it, a microphone? Oh, yeah. No! Cut the freaking symbol. You're going to tell me where I got to get something. I've been trying to... Yeah, Bonaire was not going to cry in that one because they didn't, or maybe he did cry. I don't know if he cried in that interview at all. I mean, it's just like, you know, the only time a Bonaire cries whenever it's not crying about shooting and in Arizona. No, the waterworks only come on when he starts thinking about himself or something happened in his childhood. I mean, you ever notice that? It's always about, like, oh, look at these little children. I can't remember 10 kids. All right, go. Yeah. Gosh, damn it! Just one day, he's just going to have a huge rant on the, Yeah, just tell me what I'm doing, you fat girl. Oh, come here, I got you right at seven.
You know, after the Republicans run him out, him and Michael Steele should have, like, a late-night show together.
Awesome.
I would watch that every
night. I'll tell you something. I would end my own podcast if they did a podcast together. I would just it would be, you know, you got Michael Steele trying to, like, get all, like, you know, I'm going to be hip. We're going to do this hip Republican thing. And Bonehead's going, get me the virus. Oh, God. this is actually a cool story. A lot of, you know, there was a lot of Democrats that we lost in the last wave. That come to mind, Feingold, Obestar. There was one member, this comes from Think Progress, Representative Paul Kanjorski, a Democrat from Pennsylvania who had served in the House of Representatives in 1985. In an interview with the Scranton Times, he talks about his authoring and passing an amendment that would give federal regulators the power to dismantle too-big-to-fail financial institutions. And he said, it's no heroic thing, but I could have just as easily walked away. I could have taken a job on Wall Street for millions of dollars, said the congressman. He wrote a big part of the Dodd-Frank Financial Services Reform Bill. I was their greatest scourge, for Christ's sake. Addressing his specific battle, grappling with the titans of the street, Kajorski thumped his chest, insisting, I was the guy that stuck my thumb in all their eyes. I mean, I appreciate this from this guy. There were guys like Jamie Dimon, who is the CEO of, I think it's J.P. Morgan. They'll never forget me. He's probably considered the most powerful banker in the world, and I took his ass on and I defeated him. Not openly. Nobody in public knew. He tried to lead a cause to stop the Kanjorski Amendment and the Volcker Rule of incredible proportions. And asked what he plans to do now he's no longer a member of Congress. You see, he explained he has no need or desire to make a lot of money. Rather, he thinks he could be very effective in developing a support base to make sure we implement Wall Street reform. Good for him. Good for him. It would be nice to have more people like that rather than the, I don't know, I think it was despicable, Peter Orczak. I just think it's despicable. I just think it's despicable. I want a lot of money, too. We all want a lot of money. It's just a question of what you're willing to do for it. And it's just a question of what values you're willing to sell down the river. And how sort of nakedly publicly you're willing to do it. And the message you're sending to any given constituency. You know, I mean, Orczag must realize how horrible it looks. Just that alone. You know, it's not like, I don't know, it's not like he couldn't have gone and made $1 million a year. And he went and 4 or 5 million. Yeah, I guess better life for him. Congratulations. But it's still sort of despicable. This is an interesting follow-up on that Ibanez case. Do you remember we talked about this? The Massachusetts Supreme Court found that Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank Corp. wrongfully foreclosed on two properties whose mortgages were unarguably in default. The court said that Fargo and Bank Corp. failed to show that the mortgages had been assigned to them at the time of foreclosure. Now, folks, bear with me here. If you really want to understand what the issue with mayors is and what the issue is with the transference of all these mortgages, this is a very clear but little bit long article. And I'm going to read portions of it because it really, really spells it out. Now, the court found that there were holes in the chain of title that the banks could not or did not close. So the writer, and this is from CNBC, John Carney, if your bank is foreclosing on your home in Massachusetts, you should be he says you should be contacting a lawyer and planning to contest the bank's right to foreclose right now. The Massachusetts Supreme Court is considered one of the best courts in the U.S., and it means that it will carry a lot of persuasive precedent in other states. Now, supposedly, some analysts are saying, look, this is a very narrow decision. It's not going to be an issue. Don't worry about it. But this guy at CNBC makes an argument that it could actually have more implications. He says the case involved $100,000, let's just call it a $100,000 loan, on a house in Springfield, Massachusetts, made on December 1st, 2005. The initial lender, Rose Mortgage Inc., recorded the mortgage in the county registry of deeds the following day. That's what you must do. You must register or record the deed that you're the mortgage holder with the county or sometimes in a municipality. Several days later, Rose Mortgage executed an assignment, essentially sold the mortgage in blank, meaning that they were noted that they were assigning the mortgage, but left a blank space so that when it came time to identify the mortgage who was being assigned to. At some later point, the blank space in the assignment section was stamped with the name Option 1 Mortgage Corporation as the assignee, and that assignment was recorded in the Registry of Deeds on June 7, 2006. Court has no problem with that. Even the fact that the assignment was registered months later, it was fine. What does give the court pause is what happened next when the mortgage entered the Wall Street Securitization Assembly Line. Option 1, this is the Option 1 Mortgage Corporation, assigned the Springfield mortgage to Lehman Brothers, which assigned it to Lehman Brothers Holdings. Then it was assigned to Structured Asset Securities Corporation, which was a Lehman subsidiary, which then assigned the mortgage, pooled with approximately 1,200 other mortgage loans, to U.S. Bank as a trustee for the Structured Asset Securities Corporation mortgage pass-through certificates. Okay? The rub is that U.S. Trust couldn't show any evidence of these assignments. So as soon as the Ibanez mortgage entered the securitization assembly line, the assignment stopped being duly noted on the mortgage, much less recorded on any property registry offices. So it went through this mayor's process. Basically just get shuttled around. There was no real official recording. Now, U.S. Bank, who ended up with this mortgage, could have proven its ownership of the mortgage by having Option 1 simply assign the mortgage to U.S. Bank, skipping all those intermediate steps where it went to Lehman. But U.S. Bank didn't bother to do this before it foreclosed, okay, which then made the foreclosure invalid. So now you're thinking, Evan, well, the solution's easy. From now on, banks get the message. Before I foreclose, I just got to make sure whoever was the last recorded assignee grants a new assignment to me. So if the last assignee was actually, you know, seven transactions away, but that's the last one recorded, I just have them assign it directly to me, skip all those intermediary guys, and I have no problem. But it may not be so easy, because you took the mortgage from a now bankrupt subsidiary of Lehman Brothers, let's say. It's not clear that anybody at Lehman Brothers has the authority to execute the assignment now that Lehman is bankrupt. And even if you did, you'd still have a gap in the hole somewhere along the line. So forget about Lehman altogether, right? He's bankrupt. They're bankrupt, so you don't want to deal with that. If you're Option 1, if you're a bank corp, you go back to Option 1. But then you still have a problem because you didn't buy the mortgage from Option 1. And he explains the conversation may go like this. U.S. bank dude, hey, can I speak to whoever is there holding the Ibanez mortgage? You Option 1 guy. No one handles that mortgage. We sold it to Lehman 5 years ago. Okay, yeah, but I need somebody who's going to send the assignment to me. And Option 1's going to, well, first of all, you're going to have to show me that you bought that loan from Lehman. Second, I need to talk to legal because I'm not even sure if I can assign a mortgage to you because we've never dealt with you. And third, how much are you willing to pay me for all this? U.S. Bank pay you. I already own the mortgage. Well, you with the mortgage we sold to Lehman. If Lehman asks for an assignment, we'll do it as part of that deal. But I don't owe you anything. And if you want the assignment, you're going to have to at least pay for the bills, for the legal opinion that says it's okay for us to do this. U.S. Bank says, you don't have to be a shit about this. Option one says, I don't have to give you an assignment. A-hole. Click. So this could be a real problem. But that was a great story in my estimation about like just giving you an idea of what the problem the banks are following and just how much fraud is involved in all that. Ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, it is that time. We will get to more stories later. And I will take your IMs at Majority FM, or I think Sam Cedar Show, or Cedar MBS. Any of those old IM addresses will work. Oh, tomorrow on the show, we have a guy who did a documentary on hydrofracking. Is that right? Yes.
Josh Fox.
Josh Fox. Fantastic. Folks, if you're listening on iTunes, apparently there's a little bit of delay, so you have to subscribe directly. I'm not sure what, but we're aware of it, and we're dealing with iTunes. It's an iTunes problem. And folks, if you have the opportunity, please become a Majority Report member. Please. As you, as our membership grows, our ability to do things like take phone calls and to have better things in general increases. So your membership is greatly appreciated. And, of course, if you ever need coffee or tea or chocolate, justcoffee.coop, our sponsor, our only sponsor at the time, for the time being, go to justcoffee.coop. Put Majority in the coupon code and get 10% off your coffee. All right, folks. Talk to you tomorrow. Back. It's the post show. Josh asks me, what song did you play at the break? It was Man in Uniform by Gang of Four. Also, I should tell you, I am interviewing later in the day David Nywert of Crooks and Liars, and wrote a does a lot of work on eliminationist language, and I'm interviewing him for Ring of Fire. Available, check your local listings. Check your local listings, I should say. But you can stream it live on Saturday afternoon. Dradman Thieves, go out there and kick some conservative ass, Sam. Playing Rocky Fight song. Thank you. Nefertiti, you changed Cedar MVS to Sammy. FYI. But. We should send Delay a lovely basket of soaps and lotions for his booking day into jail. Ooh, I have no idea. Reinstate the assault weapons ban? Yes. Hello, Nefer. You might find this interesting. I was talking to a member of the Foreign Service on New Year's about the whole WikiLeaks thing, and she said that most of those ambassadors don't write those cables themselves. We should not call Eric Erickson by his name. For now on, he should be Eric, son of Eric. Suggest a drop for your ORZAG comments. Despicable.org. Oh. Interesting. Let's see. False equivalency is bullshit, Comedy Central edition. Two incoming mini walls of text. Ah, John Stewart, I wouldn't blame our political rhetoric any more than I would blame heavy metal music for Columbine. Also did some ethereal hand-wringing over the rhetoric, despite knowing damn well who the bad apples are, personally skewering them in the past. Colbert video montage, Tea Partier and host of Fox mentioned Shooter is of the left. An Arizona Tea Party. Obama said, bring a gun equals James Carville. The Tea Party is tolerant of extreme violence. Palin has blood on her hands. I don't understand what you're saying. That's just, when you write something like that, understand that I don't know what you're talking about. So you're trying to communicate what you're talking about. Stuart, you know, look, I think there is some validity to the idea that political rhetoric doesn't affect behavior any more than heavy metal music does for Columbine. But I think that if the principal and the teachers in your schools were also saying, kill yourself, I think it would actually start to affect you. It's not a question of it just coming from one source. I mean, I really do think that... Well, let me ask you this. How would John Stewart explain, like, what inspired someone to shoot a BB gun or throw a rock or smash in Gabrielle Giffords' window at her office? Was that political rhetoric? When people are dehumanized, when there's this sense that the government is... tyrannical, I don't know. I think it's a very hard argument to argue that the context of all that didn't affect it. I mean, I just think that it's impossible to say that it's not irresponsible. And it's also impossible to say that it didn't affect it at all. I mean, I understand what he's saying. But it is highly irresponsible. I thought you nailed the dynamics of crazy influence yesterday, and it seems to be roughly the same as others have said on Democracy Now!, etc. But I wonder if the average voter looks at this and sees more waffling weakness from the left. Do you think a less measured, more forceful response would be received better by Joe Centrist voter? If this wasn't crazy, it would be another crazy, after all. If it wasn't this crazy... it would be another crazy after all. I'm not 100% sure I follow what you're saying, Sugar High. Asking Republicans, ZPAC, to take ownership of their violent rhetoric is asking them to cede their worldview. That, as Margaret Thatcher put it, there is no such thing as a society. There is individual men and women. Taking responsibility for the rhetoric, acknowledging that society exists is deeply interconnected. It means acknowledging the common bonds we share. Once they make that leap, how can they oppose health care reform? They'll never do it. Well, I agree. I'm not calling on Republicans to do this. I don't think they're going to change. What I am calling on are actually the mainstream media outlets to punish and disincentivize this behavior. That's what I'm suggesting. So in some respects... if John Stewart wants that type of rhetoric to change, he should just keep calling them out rather than sort of saying that you know, it's just political rhetoric in general. Don't be a putz. I certainly don't disagree with your point about the media's false equivalence, but how about the false inequivalence of all the lives of the people we're senselessly killing in Iraq and Afghanistan? Tell me, Sam, are American lives worse more than Afghani or Iraqi? The media devoted 1% of the coverage to the ongoing senseless destruction, we might be actually close to the end of Europe. You know, I totally agree. I totally agree with that. I mean... it's a rather off-color joke, but I mean, I was sitting there listening in the to Radigan as we were about to get on, and you know, talking about unity and can all Americans come together and dispel this violence. And I wanted to sort of jump in and add, yes, so that we can all agree that the people who should be subject to this type of violent rhetoric and violence are people who don't live in this country. Can we just all Americans unify around the principle that if we're going to talk about killing people and spilling blood, that we're really just talking about innocent civilians in other countries? Can we all please do that?
That's the best part about all these right-wing pundits talking about how there's no place for violence in political society.
There's no place for violence, ladies and gentlemen, unless it's directed at some other poor, unfortunate schmuck who, you know, we'll never hear from. We don't even speak the same language. No, I agree. And I think also in between that point, don't be a putz is... Now, I think, look, the media covers massacres like this more than they'll cover, you know, individual murders of some four-year-old kid in an inner city or something like that. Because of, you know, it's happening to white people at a supermarket. But I agree. I agree with your point there. Avant, I put together this pic of a survey symbol in a gun sight with Sarah Pack is used. It's clearly a target. Oh, come on. I don't even need to look at that. It's a joke. Surveyor site.
I'm just about to post something. Her in-trade price, have you seen that? How it's plummeted in the last 14 days? It's just
really?
Dropping.
Avant, if you got that on Tumblr, can't they link it to our Tumblr site?
If you follow our Tumblr site, we will follow you back, and then your articles show up in our feed, and then I can reblog them from there. It's very simple. We've had some people emailing them or sending them through messages to the Tumblr account. It's easier if you just post them. Post them to your Tumblr account, and then we'll reblog it or repost it, and you know, via whoever you are.
Okay, Avant, did you understand any of that? Because I certainly didn't, but good luck with that. It's media.tumblr.com.
That's her Tumblr site?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Kyle, my solution to firearm issues. Anyone can define themselves like the founders did. Only 1770 era's technology. Markets, muskets for all, no Glocks. Josh, you can take my surveyor's tools when you pry them from my cold, dead hands. That's good, Josh. MSNBC reporting Representative Giffords breathing on her own, according to Harold. Good. Good news. Blazers are going to kick some Knicks butts tonight. I'm not a Knicks fan. I'm a Celts fan. Hi, Sammy, from Milano. Just some info on the Arizona gun laws from a former resident. No permits are needed. 18 to buy a rifle, 21 for a handgun, and federal background check for both. Usually completed in 30 or 40 minutes. That background check must be like, are you on a terrorist watch list? No. Okay, enjoy. Hi, Johnny. Did you catch Senator Reid on Meet the Press this weekend? He shot down David Gregory's bullshit premise that Social Security is part of the deficit problem. I didn't. I'm glad to hear that. Farmer Gillian, on a much lighter note, could you guys shake it up a bit with the music interlude, though it's an interesting juxtaposition with the mostly male voices on your show? And cutting to Gang of Fours, I love a man in uniform, but maybe not everybody, or... We did.
Did what?
We just played...
No, they want more variety.
Oh, but maybe not every day, or is a song in honor of Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal? Instead, how about Bronski beats Small Town Boy? I'm not going to play that. Just trying to laugh through the tragic news these days. We'll put more music in. Viperizer, the false equivalent. Okay, all right. Chesapeake, glad you got Josh Fox on the show tomorrow. Can't wait to hear the interview. How can we maintain the same kind of party discipline as Republicans if we don't primary Obama? Well... I don't know that we can ever maintain the same kind of party discipline, but I mean, we don't have the same cards as Republicans have. You know, there's this whole dynamic. I mean, you remember. Remember that Lawrence O'Donnell had, when he was talking about the tax deal, he said, I remember him saying, like, look, we all know that Republicans are always irresponsible when it comes to taxation policy, and Democrats have to be responsible. That's the dynamic in everything. Right? I mean... That's the dynamic in everything. We need to tone down the rhetoric. I am, as a Democratic congressman or senator, I'm not going to point fingers at the people who are calling for blood. It would be wrong. It would increase the rhetoric. I mean, it's that is the belief system that we work under. I don't know how to deal with that. But I, you know, I have talked about, you know, the value of primarying Obama. And the limitations on the value of primarying Obama. And how I do not think it would be helpful to have Thune or Palin or any of those nut jobs on the right as president. It didn't help us last time, did it? We got 8 years of Bush, and then what? Maybe on the left what we need to do is be more incremental. I don't know. I mean, what if Gore had not been cheated out of the presidency? I mean, do you think that our options would have been Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? Or do you think that they would have been to the left? I mean, God forbid it would be Joe Lieberman. Oh, my God. It just occurred to me. That may be struck down. But, I mean, would Lieberman have had the same, you know, disposition at that point? I mean, would he? I mean, he's simply, you know, Joe Lieberman. We all know who Joe Lieberman is. Joe Lieberman is an opportunist. Joe Lieberman is like John McCain. Joe Lieberman's out for Joe. You know, there's no ideology there. It's just what, you know. Oh, God. But frankly, you know, would Joe Lieberman be any worse than Barack Obama at this point? I don't know. Maybe we would be able to primary Joe Lieberman. That, not an impossibility. So, you know, maybe after 8 years of Obama, our next nominee, maybe, will be more to the left than Obama. I mean, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
It would make more sense than anything else, yeah.
It would make more sense than the idea that our nominee after one or two terms of Palin or Thune or Romney would be to the left of Obama.
Yeah, definitely.
I think. Sarah the Surveyor. Hola, Sam. A little birdie told me you did an interview with David. You will interview David Nyward on Ring of Fire. Looking forward to it. Mama Bear likes to survey what the enemy is thinking, if you know what I mean. By the way, surveying is creationist. It creates maps, don't you know? Steve Bartlett. Hey, Sam. Great show. Blah, blah, blah. Who does that version of Man in Uniform? It's not Gang of Four. It's not?
That's Gang of Four. Yeah, there are a bunch of live versions
out
there.
Yes, it was. And speaking of them, do you remember a movie called A Music War? No. Sounds like a cover anyway. Maybe my ears are off. I don't know. You asked that as a question? I don't know. Morella, 622. Are both sides, the both sides do it bullshit, and the mainstream media has always infuriated me, but now it really throws me off the edge. I'm so glad you and a brave few others are addressing the crux of the problem, which is accountability for the responsibilities of hate speech. In this vein, have you heard the latest PAP attack? It really hit the nail. No, I haven't. No, we're talking to PAP tomorrow as we record Ring of Fire. Jimmy Reefer Cake, I heard there were some right-wing assholes saying that the shooter was influenced by Reefer Madness. That was the biggest load of bullshit I've heard in years. I haven't heard that. I heard that he actually hadn't been smoking pot in a long time, and that it was when he stopped smoking pot that he went even crazier.
Yeah, I think he was
self-medicating himself. Even today, the same lies are used, even for shit from decades ago. You want to tone down the rhetoric? You want less violence? We need more reefer, not less. Gang of Four is okay. Jet plane vagina would be better. Kevin11721. The next time some conservative gives you this false equivalency argument, take them up on it. Agree that both sides should stop. It costs us nothing to stop something we don't do. That's not true. Listen to the mainstream media. They're all now talking about Daily Kos as a hate site because of that stupid Matt Bai piece. The difference between saying the healthcare debate panel kills grandma and we killed innocent people in Iraq. Yes, of course. You know, some moron on Twitter. Oh, Sam, such eliminationist rhetoric. You're just like Daily Kos. Oh, when he finally responds. Now. Or tomorrow. At 11:30. I am going back and forth with some moron on Twitter who's been, you know, trying to argue that there's an equivalency. And I told him, he's like, I said, send me your list on email. And, you know, I will answer your questions on air. And he's like, and let you continue to lie and obfuscate using me as your foil with no rebuttal? No thanks. And so I invited him to come on the show. We'll call him up.
Cool.
And he can say his piece, and I'll say mine.
Cool.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. I'll take this surveyor tool out of my cold, dead hands.
Just started the Sammy Cam and had to watch a BP ad about how good job they did cleaning up the spill.
What?
Seriously?
Oh, yeah.
Are you fucking serious?
They're everywhere.
Oh, all right. Well, here. Here's my response to that ad. Bullshit. Jay Shivo. Gregory's question to read was, Social Security, how should it be changed? All right. And here's my answer. Drop the minimum retirement age to 62 for 3 years. That's how it should be changed. Raise the cap to first $1 million of income. Vasco Huja. The military is different. It exists for one purpose, and that's to apply state violence. Colin Powell, Meet the Press, 6/10/07. Well, that's right. SPAF, one reason we cannot have a party unity is because the Republicans have managed to make a large number of Democrats afraid to call themselves liberal. They do everything they can to prove they're not liberal. No. No. I think the problem is money. I mean, we had a fairly united party when it came to things like Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Fairly united party when it comes to things like social questions. Yes, gay rights are not moving as fast as I would like to see them move. But the real issue at the end of the day is that we have too many Democrats who are too many Democrats who are corporatists. Not as much as Republicans, but that's still not enough. Should have asked yesterday's guest to re-EPA knowingly approved bee killing bee-killing pesticide. Sam, you need to post some show notes so we can read the stuff you reference. That's true, actually. That would be helpful. Yeah. I mean, I'm going back, and I can't even follow what... I don't know what we talked about with Digby. We can't tell. We need to... At least on the blog.
Yeah.
We need to do that. We need to do that. We need to staff up. You need all to become members. NRA fought for the right of those on the terrorist watch list to get a gun. Maybe now Matt Bye can juxtapose comments from Jim DeMint with the stoner ramblings of Jimmy Reefer Cake. Says, don't be a putz. Shanks off. I think the focus... Oh, I should say, Dane Cook the man. Your message was received by Marin. Shanksoft, I think the focus on rhetoric won't work. We should just as focus on gun control. How can a crazy person so easily get ammo from Walmart? Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. I would just like to see the mainstream media start at one point, even the low-hanging fruit, to stop their false equivalency. I think that helps. But yes, there should be some form of gun control. Agreed. Harold, Representative Githards, Blazers play Boston. You said Celtics, right? Here on the 27th, they're most likely steamroll us. They're admittedly my favorite East Coast team as well. Yes, well. Okay. Steve Bartlett, send a link to info on to Majority Reporters. Check it out when you get some time. I think you'll dig it, Sam. I will. Varela, yes, BP is advertising on your Ustream. Well, what do you want, folks? I do not have about the rundown blogs. Okay, Avant, thank you. Check out Majority Reporters. Wait, Majority Report cap.tumblr.com. What's that? Majority.
Give me a second.
I think you may have added. What is that? Majority Tray Cap. Majority Report Recap. Oh, Majority Report Recap. Oh, sweet.
Dot Recap?
No, it's Majority Report Recap.tumblr.com. Dude, why aren't you following us on Tumblr?
Wow.
Dorsey just, you should have seen what Dorsey did. I'm going to do it for the Sammy Cam. All right, ready? I'm Dorsey.
Wow, this is great.
Avant, you just totally just opened it today. Just did. Awesome.
We'll get this on the majority.fm site.
Avant, Dorsey will be sending you an email shortly.
Weren't you talking about something like this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Avant, the whole world is about to open at your feet.
You just made getting my pizza today a lot easier.
Dorsey may be getting two slices of pizza today because of you, Avant, 1963.
I'll have all that time to eat the second slice.
By the way, my name's Travely... 76. My name is pronounced like Travely with a T. My name's Travis. Get it? Travely. I get it. Wonderful. Don't be a putz. Haven't watched it yet. How crazy was Winona Ryder last night? What?
She was awesome.
Wait, what are you talking about?
She was on Jimmy Fallon last night. It's the first time she's been on TV in like 6 years.
Oh, really?
And she had crazy eyes, and she was talking about she doesn't use the internet because she's afraid. You can read this at newyorkmag.com, by the way. I did the recap last night about this, but I'll give you a preview. She had crazy eyes.
Hold on for a second.
Winona Ryder had crazy eyes last night, and she was talking about she doesn't use the internet. There was like a story a couple months ago about how she doesn't use the internet, doesn't use computers, anything like that.
Same with Janine.
And she said that she's afraid that to Google anything because it's just one step away from accidentally joining Al-Qaeda. She was dead serious. She wasn't, like, kidding around. And then she also mentioned Pete Townsend.
Well, you know, I'll do this story tomorrow, but, you know, that story about Twitter, you know, getting subpoenaed. And,
yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of people who actually say, you know, Wired, like, this is probably happening to other to Google and whatnot, but Wired had a good piece. You know, Twitter received a gag order. You're not allowed to tell people about this, but then it challenged its gag order, and there's a call for other companies to do the same thing. So, you know, she may be exaggerating for effect, or maybe she believes it and she's not used to computers. But, you know, Janine doesn't use computers. She doesn't have email. I've actually installed a computer at her house. She wouldn't use it.
I mean, I can totally understand it. It's just she was very
she's had trouble over the years.
Who, Winona?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I love her though. I love her. I love her and her craziness. It was great. It was fun to watch. And you know, she was rad.
What is the Mel Gibson over Dodger story? Overn Dodger.
I'm not sure if it's connected with Winona Ryder though. She claims.
No, I don't think it is. But go ahead.
She claims that she, like, knew that she was, like, warning people about his, you know, anti-Semitic and, you know, crazy views long before anybody caught on to it.
She's Jewish.
Really?
Yes.
Well, she looked great last night. I loved her.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Putting in a plug for that.
I won't see her new movie, though. Sorry.
What is it?
She's in that movie with Vince Vaughn and... King of Queens. It's a Ron Howard movie. The one there was a big deal because they said something like, that's so gay in the promos. And there was an outcry, and Ron Howard's like, I'm not taking it out.
Isn't the tagline for that something like, they were the best of friends and nothing could come between them, or could it?
Yeah, it doesn't make any... If you look at the poster, you're like, I don't understand anything about this movie. Which is good, because like I don't like the movie posters that give the entire movie away, you know,
right
away. So, but it's still, it doesn't really make me go, well, I want to see that movie.
Did I guess I'll save this for, I'll save it for, remind me about Ron Howard for Name Drop Friday. Or have I just given it away? will you agree to take the pledge? GlennBeck.com. I denounce violent threats and calls for the destruction of our system, regardless of their underlying ideology, whether they come from the Houthi militia or Francis Fox Piven.
What?
I'm not taking any pledge. Hey, take any goddamn pledge. Mel Gibson told her, I don't know you. Oh. Mel Gibson told her, I didn't know you were an oven dodger when he found out she was Jewish. Travioli. Yeah, ravioli, the pasta. I get that. Are you serious? You didn't think I knew what ravioli was? Jay Shibo, I misremembered. Gregory actually said Social Security. How does it have to change? Kispeyev. You're right to a point. The exception will be on guns and war. Even though money is part of it, I also think they feel they're trying to worry about... Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. About liberals, right. Ramble Touge. Yes, Winona said... Okay. 15 years ago at a party. There you go. All right, folks. Well, it has been, once again, quite enjoyable. I will see you tomorrow. Please, please, if you have an opportunity, become a member if you haven't already. And by all means, if you're on Tumblr, send us an email, majorityreporters@gmail.com.
If you're on Tumblr, just start following us. Just follow us at majorityreporters.tumblr, and I'll follow you back, and we'll have all... it's that easy.
Fantastico! Talk to you soon. The choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the man